This is Radioactive Magazine, a KKFI public affairs program of progressive activism, opinion, and commentary. Opinions expressed on this program are those of the speakers alone and are not necessarily the views of KKFI, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, show hosts, or other guests on the program.
This is Spencer Graves with Radioactive Magazine on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. I'm here with Matthew Westra with Global and Multicultural Education. So tell us about Global and Multicultural Education.
Global and Multicultural Education, which is often shortened to GAME, was founded, I believe it was 42 years ago, by Manny Pedram, who was a professor at UMKC. He's been very involved and invested in peace building and in multicultural awareness, having people have an appreciation not just for the stereotypes but for the realities of other cultures, and to see that cultures aren't necessarily the same as political borders and what we get in some rarefied image through TV or movies.
That's very interesting. So tell us more about your program.
Well, we actually do several different things as an organization. It's a nonprofit. One of the things we do is a biennial conference. We just had it last fall, so it'll be 2 years before the next one.
In October.
It was, yeah.
Yes, it's with Park University and Johnson County Community College, and
they had people there. It was held at an area high school. I'm forgetting the name of the school, but it's one of the magnets.
Okay, so this was not the peace building conference.
This is not the peace building conference. This was our own that focuses on primarily on the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child, the CRC, and the Convention...
The CRC?
Convention on the Rights of the Child.
Okay, great.
And CEDAW, which is the Convention for the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women. So, trying to keep the words that go with the acronyms. And so we had several different topics, human trafficking, even environmental issues, because, you know, the environment and the future of health. And so how we manage peaceful borders and peaceful living for people across the globe. What we've got coming up is our annual Peace Builders Award Luncheon. That's sort of a game signature event. And we'll be honoring two area, an individual and an organization. Alvin Sykes, who without legal training, he has spent many years tracking down, trying to solve unsolved murders of African Americans, including Emmett Till. So he's a longtime civil rights activist, wonderful man. And the other is Cultural Crossroads, who does good work here in Kansas City about multiculturalism and getting people educated and aware. That'll be held on January 26th from 11:30 to 1:30 at Grand Street Cafe.
And your website is?
kcglobalconcepts.org. So kcglobalconcepts, all one word, .org. And you can look up at the top. There's links. You see the Peace Builder Luncheon, and that's where you can register.
And so if you go to that website, you can learn more about your activities.
Absolutely. Along the top, the menu gives you links to other activities, to our biennial conference, subpage, and others.
So you, are you already planning for your next biennial conference, which would be in May or so, probably, this coming year?
No, no. The biennial, it's going to be every other year.
Oh, biennial. Twice a year. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I always get those confused myself.
Right.
So it's every other year, so it will be in the fall of 2020. And no,
I
haven't started. I think the planning committee is still in exhaustion mode.
I see. And Alvin Sykes?
Alvin Sykes.
And where does he live?
Somewhere in the Kansas City area.
Uh-huh. Wonderful. Wonderful. All right. Well, thank you very much, Matthew Westra, with Global and Multicultural Education.
Well, thank you for having us on.
Okay, this is Craig Lubow. Thank you for being here and listening to Radioactive Magazine. And my guest today is one of our fellow hosts, but today he's on as a guest, Pat Reilly. And he's researched a lot about legislation that's going to be coming up in the Missouri legislature for this coming session. And that includes some bills that have been pre-filed. So welcome, Pat.
Well, thank you, Craig. Good to be here.
And tell us, first of all, what is the process? You said they can file bills, pre-file them. What does that mean?
Any of the legislatures in both the Senate and the Missouri House are able to pre-file bills before the opening session. These bills, some of them will be amended, some of them will be withdrawn, some of them will go to committee, some will be passed into laws. But they are allowed to do this before the session starts so that the information can be entered into the record and they can take it and run from there.
Okay, now a similar aspect in some states, bills that are filed 1 year, if the next year it's the same Congress, those bills stay alive through that whole two-year process.
In some cases, yes, those bills can stay alive for a couple of sessions. It depends on if it actually goes into committee and hearings. Sometimes the committees will table the measures for a period of time to gather more information or to get more input from citizens or groups or whatever. So they can carry over for a second session, because there really are, you know, two sessions to each of the general assemblies.
All right. And one of the topics is, well, let's start with, there were several amendments and referendums that passed in this past November.
That's correct.
2018.
Uh-huh.
And you've got some legislators who are trying to overcome the will of the public, much like they did back in 2011, 2012, when they overrode the voters and refused to implement the puppy mill amendment.
That's correct. And the primary person who was responsible for overriding the puppy mill bill was then at the time Senator Mike Parsons. It is now Governor Mike Parsons. So even though he doesn't have the clout on the floor that he had as a senator, he still wields a lot of power as governor as far as directing, you know, some of the folks in the Senate on, you know, overcoming or dancing around, if you would prefer to use it that way, or maybe not necessarily repealing but amending certain parts of the amendments. And in particular, Amendment number 1, which we passed in a pretty healthy margin, was called the Clean Missouri Bill. And there were a couple of four or five different provisions in that bill. One was lobbying. One was the redistricting, the open legislature records, or a freedom of information type material, campaign contribution limits, and all of the lobbyist gifts. Now, Mr. Parsons has said, and this was come from an article both in the Kansas City Star and the Columbia Daily Tribune, if I could read just a second, Parson told the AP that broader changes may be needed to slow the proliferation of citizen ballot initiatives, which he said are used by individuals and groups with deep pockets and who have their own agendas that they're wanting to push. What he's taken a look at in particular with this amendment number one is the redistricting that needs to be done or redone in 2020 with the new census. That is primary consideration because the possibility of the redistricting could give a little bit greater vote to some of the minorities and districts that have gone a little more heavily Republican, where the Democratic votes in that particular district have not been heard or acted upon. The AP seems to make an estimate that a few more seats in the House and possibly the Senate could go more Democratic than Republican. And right now, both of the houses are dominated by Republican legislatures. It's a tough hoe for the Democrats in both the House and the Senate in Missouri. Another thing that that they're looking at with the Clean Missouri is the lobbying restrictions. Before the first of the year, when Amendment 1 took place or took effect, a person could quit the legislature, either the Senate or the House, and within 6 months become a lobbyist. With the new Clean Missouri bill, it's a 2-year waiting period before someone can leave the legislature and become a lobbyist. Several legislatures did that on December 30th and 31st, so they wouldn't have to wait the 2-year period. From what I understand, there are 13 open seats in the legislature right now. Now, not all of them took advantage of leaving early so that they could become lobbyists, but the majority of them did. So to try and get around the 2-year waiting period, they left before January 1 when Amendment 1 took effect. So a couple of things there that have kind of thrown a snowball, you know, into the legislative process and being able to go outside of the legislative process and have any influence on other members in the Senate and the House.
Okay, so they did not make that bill retroactive then?
No, it took effect on January 1.
Okay. And when we talk about redistricting, I heard an unnamed radio station, not ours, that there was a discussion about that. And some of the people indicated that in some situations, the new redistricting law would actually hurt people of color. And they used an example, and I didn't quite follow it. Maybe you can explain it if you know what they're talking about. That as an example, they gave Ferguson as an example, and they said with the new redistricting, there would actually be less people of color that would have an opportunity to be elected than under the old system.
That is, I'll be honest with you, Craig, that's a little new to me and nothing that I had been able to come up with, but it's something that I will look into, and if I have the opportunity to get one of our representatives mm-hmm. from the Kansas City area up here on the show over the course of the next couple of months, that'll be a topic that we'll touch on and see what we can find some information on.
Craig, so interestingly enough, that was one of the lines of information that Rex Singfield's organization was pushing, so they created, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars of investment in this misinformation campaign. The legislation itself relating to Amendment 1 includes certain provisions to make sure that there won't be any constitutional violations based on racial makeup of districts. Mm-hmm. So I think the law itself provides the safeguard, but it is interesting how potent misinformation can be, especially when it's funded by hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Okay. And I think what a lot of it will have to do, too, is, you know, a big issue right now nationwide, as well as in the state of Missouri, is gerrymandering districts mm-hmm. and making them so that they stay a particular flavor, mm-hmm. you know, Republican or Democrat, blue or red, if you want to look at it that way. And this redistricting efforts in 2020 with that come with the census should give a little bit more of a determination to make it equal, you know, across districts, as opposed to setting up, well, this district will stay red or this mm-hmm. district will stay blue. So hopefully it gives a voice to the entire communities as the redistricting goes.
Okay. And the campaign limits.
Mm-hmm.
At federal level, a lot of that was thrown out by the Supreme Court. So how does that work at the state level?
Well, the new dollar figures for Amendment Number 1 is a maximum of $2,500 to a senatorial campaign from an individual, $2,000 for a House or Missouri House representative. So rather than being able to throw super money, you know, at the candidates, it would do things like maybe limit the Sinkfields and the Humphreys and some folks like that from providing unlimited monetary resources, and make it actually a little more participatory for the average individual. Taking money out of the big money out of politics is definitely needed, as I think most of us all can agree. Too much is bought and paid for, and it's gone away from we the people to we the money. Mm-hmm. So anything in the long run, I think that helps eliminate that process or check that process is a good thing.
Okay. Another issue is the discrimination issues based upon gender identity.
Correct. One of the bills that was filed, pre-filed, is SB for Senate Bill 172. And essentially what 172 is doing is it bars discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity. So what we're seeing here is not only the LGBTQIA, but the transgender issue that has taken a forefront over the last couple of years. If I could, real quick, I'll just read a couple of lines out of SB 172 so you can get an idea of what it says. Sexual orientation, gender identity discrimination includes any unfair treatment based on a person's presumed or assumed race, color, religion, national origin, ancestry, sex, sexual orientation, gender identity, age as it relates to employment, disability, or familial status as it relates to housing, regardless of whether or not the presumption or assumption as to such characteristic is correct.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a lot of things out there that says, you know, well, you know, if you're a male, you're a male. If you're a female, you're a female. Well, that's trying to eliminate this discrimination. Gender identity, the gender-related identity, appearance, mannerisms, or other gender-related characteristics of an individual with or without regard to the individual's assigned sex at birth. So it's really taking an attack on the right, or taking an attack on the fight against the rights of transgender or, you know, the sexual identities or orientation. I think you're going to see that not only in Missouri, but I understand that there is one that is working or just worked up in Kansas in one of the cities over on the other side of the state line. It is and will become a national issue. So I'm glad to see us having one of our representatives file to make this happen.
All right. And next week we're going to have the acting director from the ACLU in Kansas on our show here.
Fantastic.
So I will be sure to ask her about that bill.
Fantastic. Yeah.
And I know it's been introduced a couple of times before and just barely got defeated.
Right.
So,
well, I think it's becoming more aware and more conscious. And, you know, again, as the issue becomes more in the mainstream,
mm-hmm.
then the chances of passage become much better. Yeah. And I think we're at that point in history now that it will happen.
Mm-hmm. So another one I'm going to take this a little bit out of order from what you had mentioned before when we were talking. Because I know a lot of people are interested in concealed carry laws.
Yes. There's probably four or five different bills that I saw in the House and the Senate that are dealing with concealed carry. And let's see. This particular one is Senate Bill number 39. And essentially what it does is it allows the concealed carry of firearms on public transportation systems and the transport of non-functioning or unloaded firearms on public buses. Now, in the past, those have been a couple of entities where guns, whether concealed or open carry, have not been allowed. Let me just quickly read you this part of the legislation. A person carrying a firearm concealed on or about his or her person who is lawfully in possession of a valid concealed carry permit or endorsement shall not be prohibited or impeded from accessing or using any publicly funded transportation system, nor shall such a person be harassed or detained for carrying a concealed firearm on the property, vehicles, or conveyances owned, contracted, or leased by such systems that are accessible to the public. For purposes of this section, public transportation system means the property, equipment, rights of way, or buildings, either publicly or privately owned and operated, of an entity that receives public funds and holds itself out of the general public for the transportation of persons. So essentially, if you had a concealed carry permit, you can carry your gun onto the bus without any problem whatsoever. So let's just take the ATA as an example. You're going to hop on the bus, you know, the Main Street bus that runs out South Oak or whatever, without any problem, carrying your gun as long as you have a CCW license or you have the endorsement to carry one. If you are an employee of KCATA.
So let me ask you real quick on that.
Yeah.
Are the bus drivers, are they going to be responsible for checking everybody's license?
Well, the thing about concealed is you never know who's carrying. That is the thing behind the concealed. The open carry law is different.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's hidden, nobody knows.
Okay.
But even the employees of the KCATA can bring one onto the property where they work, can bring one into the building where they work. There are inherent problems that could arise, but, you know, We're just going to have to see how this one pans out.
Okay.
It's an interesting one to me as far as concealed on public transportation systems. And I assume, too, that since a public entity like or an entity that transports the public, handicapped transportation, disabled transportation, that type of thing, those folks are allowed to conceal and carry, too. So It could be interesting.
And are there, does the proposed bill have any exceptions for any places where you would not be allowed to have the concealed carry?
I am not seeing any.
Okay.
But I didn't dig into the totality of the bill. Just picked this particular area to take a look at and let folks know that it is proposed.
Had a similar bill in Kansas, which was eventually watered down a little bit. You know, originally you could carry your gun into the courthouse, so they finally took that out. Mm-hmm. And I think they took out the part about allowing it in schools. So they finally made a few exceptions.
Well, hopefully cooler heads will prevail.
I don't know if I would count on that. all right, so let's talk a little bit about the Sunshine Laws and how that relates to cell phones and text messages.
Well, if the listeners on the Missouri side, and even the Kansas side, remember, we had a little issue with former Governor Greitens and his use and some of his staff's use of their cell phone for text messaging and keeping track of each other They basically said that they were using it for appointments, dates, you know, things like this. But they were using a program called Confide, which essentially erased their text messages and things after a period of time. Greitens and his associates always made the contention that they were not conducting any public business on their cell phones, and therefore they were confident that using Confide posed no problems with the Freedom of Information Act or any information that would be available under the Sunshine Law regulations. Well, there's been a couple of bills filed. House Bill 386 is the biggest one, where public record talking about the Sunshine Laws, and basically they are saying in this particular bill or that's proposed, the social media pages of a public governmental body, including the personal social media pages of the members of such governmental body, if the personal pages are used to convey information about such governmental body, and including electronic mail, text messaging, direct or private messaging through social media accounts, or messaging through other applications or platforms designed for communication. So essentially what the House is trying to do with this legislation is make sure that every kind of communication between any of the parties using cell phones or any type of text messaging, all will fall under Sunshine Law regulations, the Freedom of Information. So Confide in some of these applications that hide or destroy are not kosher.
Now, were they doing this using their own personal cell phones or government?
Government-issued cell phones, and that's what this covers, okay. Government-issued or state-issued cell phones.
All right. And I believe we've got about 1 minute left. About 2 minutes.
Well, we got to get ready to wrap up. If I could... if folks are interested in following, you know, some of this stuff and looking mm-hmm. at bills and issues that are being going through the House, I use a program that's very available off of the Internet. It's called Legiscan/Mo for Missouri.
So it's
Legiscan, Legiscan/Missouri. And you can track the bills, you can read the text in the bills, you can follow the discussion of the bills as they go through committees or pass through, you know, the discussion process down in Jefferson City. Now, about 669 bills were pre-filed so far this year. And the session starts tomorrow with everybody getting sworn in. So you can follow these and look at these and see if they're of interest to you. And, of course, contact your legislators. Let them know how you feel. Give them an idea of what's going on in your mind and how you stand on some of these issues. It is we the people. We elect these folks, so let them know.
All right. So I want to thank you for being on. For those just joining us, we've been talking to Pat Reilly, who has... looked at the legislation that's coming up in Missouri.
And there's just a couple of things real quick, getting off the side notes. At the mm-hmm. Not everything is dead reckoning at the Senate, the House. There is two bills I wanted to make a notice. House Bill 407, the Cryptobroncus Alaginiensis, also known as the Hellbender Salamander, Snot Otter, or Lasagna Lizard, is selected for and shall be known as the official endangered species for the state of Missouri. And House Bill 78 designates July 7th as Missouri Sliced Bread Day, commemorating the first sale of sliced bread on July 7th, 1928 in Chillicothe, Missouri. It's the greatest thing since sliced bread, folks.
Okay, thank you.